I remember from Mr. Kirkland in particular is that he wanted a building design that people had never seen in those parts before.
And so, he definitely got it, I see. Tell me about meeting Mr. Kirkland for the first time and what he said. The Commercial Appeal in Memphis reported that he expressed an interest in a design that would be surprising and might offend some people.
Well, I didn't hear that offend part the first time I met with him. It was a very serious conversation which he was trying to decide between architects. I do recall that he was concerned about the cost, whether we could design something within his budget. And we have, and we did, and which was a tight budget, by the way. It's $300 a square foot, so for a building of that design, it was challenging. I had to use everything I've learned over the years to do that. He was very appreciative of that.
Talk about the building itself. It really is unusual looking. Would you describe it? I think you said in one interview that it's a happy looking place, and it is.
Yeah, well, that was the intent. I think that, you know, the forms are expressive. They kind of leap towards the sky. I would describe them as soaring upward. That was the impression that I tried to give because I had the impression from talking with him and from others that I've met in the community that there are aspirations for this building to be representative of the community in a very positive way and to impact. I think Mr. Kirkland really feels this way, that he thinks he can have an impact on the aspirations of the young people in particular in Obion County so that they might think beyond where they may have been thinking before. I think that not only the design of the building, but the exhibits inside will definitely, absolutely have that kind of impact.
I understand that Mr. Kirkland invited the community to vision the exhibits with him, and I wonder if you were in on any of those conversations.
I was there for all of those. There was at least a monthly meeting in which the committees, and as I recall, there were many of them, maybe up to 10 for different aspects of the exhibits. Even though I wasn't directly involved with the design of the exhibits, that was Think, it was important for me to understand, you know, that aspect of the building, what it was going to contain, because I was shaping the container.
It seems to me in reading about the project that it is one that will change over time. So what design principles went into the building to shape it so that it could be flexible for difference in the future?
Sure. I'll just talk about the interior spaces then. It's very clearly organized in the way that I've always organized these sorts of museums. And I think you know I designed the St. Louis Science Center.
Mm-hmm.
And the organization is quite clear. And I think that I always tried to design the interior so that people did not need signs to know how to get around, and that they could come to a place in the building and understand, number one, how many levels there were, where they've been in the building, where they potentially want to go, and they can choose. When you come in the door and you have your functions that are immediately accessible to you, cafe and gift shop and ticketing, and then you come to the edge of what we're calling the Grand Hall, and you understand immediately that there are three levels, there are exhibits on all those levels, and you can choose to go up or down or stay on the floor you're on. And then you can always come back to that point for orientation. So I'll call them the flat ceiling exhibit areas, where Think has all of their really dense exhibits about various themes, are adjacent to two very significant halls. We call them halls, but, you know, because they're vertical and they're multi-floor, the Grand Hall, and then on the south, we're simply calling it the South Hall. And those are orientation elements of the interior organization. So you go through these flat areas where you could get, you know, absorbed in exhibits, but then you come to the edge of those and you understand, oh, yeah, here I am in the South Hall, and maybe I want to go upstairs or downstairs or what have you. And you always know how to get back to the front. So it's very clearly and I think, efficiently organized, but that's the way go about the organization on the interior. And then as far as the flat areas in particular, there's a lot of technology that we supply, both in the lighting and the power, to accommodate the exhibit needs.
Tell me about the observation tower.
Well, when I first met him, the other thing that was very clear is that he wanted a tower, and he had a particular height in mind as well. So that tower may or may not be the look that he had in mind, but it certainly is the height that he had in mind. As we got into it a little more, he was also very clear about having a great big American flag up there. And again, the technology of building that tower and even the technology and structure of supporting that flagpole, they're not casual. There's a lot of thought, a lot of engineering involved in the tower and in the flagpole in particular.
It is described as a place that will inspire visitors to look beyond the constraints of their own lives to what is possible. Isn't that beautiful?
Yes. Yes, it is. I told him when we had the sort of the groundbreaking out at the airport a few years ago, I told the audience there that told him directly that I think this is a noble venture, and it does focus on him in particular. You know, this is something that he wanted to do. I think it really is a noble venture. And in all the years I've been designing museums around the country, I've never encountered one with an individual quite like this. You know, there have been boards of directors, and there have been directors and that are very committed to education and all of that, but for a singular individual with a small group of people around him and putting his personal money in there, I think it really is unique and remarkable.
Here you have this very
sort of futuristic.
Futuristic
building.
Especially at night. I love the way the illumination works at night, especially on the flat site base.
Mm-hmm.
Is it comfortable in the midst of this park?
Well, it's a question that came up right from the very beginning, and I think that, for me, you just accept it for what it is. I think people understand it. There's a historic landscape around this great big kind of futuristic white building. It just is what it is, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fine. It's terrific.
What would you say is the most unusual to you about this building in the context of your building practice? And my goodness, you've built museums all around the world.
Well, I think it's exuberant. It's exuberant. And it also doesn't relate to any other buildings around it. Others that I've done have had to respond to things around them. But this is just completely on its own. So that's unique about it. Now, this isn't probably what you want to hear, but for the challenge of meeting the budget, the really tight budget, with this kind of exuberant design was pretty dominant.
How'd you do it?
Well, we used a standard exterior skin, which I call it a skin, but you know, those metal panels are a well-established system. The forms are custom, but the materials are all standard materials. So that's one way we did it. The other is on the inside, and you'll see this, it's very spare. There are no what we would call architectural finishes. The ceiling is exposed. You can see the steel structure. In some cases, you can see the fireproofing on it. The lighting systems, all the mechanical systems are exposed. So that was another particularly significant way we did it. Even though the structure is straightforward, we were burdened because it is in a earthquake zone, and there's a lot of heavy cross bracing in the structure that we would not have had to pay for if we were in a different zone. So there's a lot of money just in the steel. Those were the principal ways. Standard materials, nothing custom, and a lot of exposed and no architectural finishes on the inside.
Mr. Sirianni, if a person were to visit all the museums you've personally designed, what elements would emerge as your trademark?
Well, I think that I'll start with the clarity of organization, the simplicity and the, I guess, clarity is the best word I can think of for the way the building is organized inside. There are always feature spaces inside. I'd like to think that they're memorable spaces. Those are generally the vertical ones. You'll see that in the Grand Hall in particular. And then on the exterior, the science museums in particular have this kind of shiny metal surface. They're not brick, and that seems to me to be appropriate. So I have done history museums with brick and granite. Texas State History Museum in particular in Austin is Texas pink granite because that's appropriate there. But generally, the buildings are what I would call shiny. Many of them have domes. The domes are done in a contemporary way. You can see that in Cleveland over the OmniMax Theater. There's a big dome that expresses itself as a ball on the exterior. So they are expressive. They have unique forms. When you look at them, you know it's not an office building or anything else. I think they do represent themselves as museums.
When will the opening be?
Well, we're shooting for October of this year. I think it'll be close.
Had you ever been to Obion County, Tennessee before?
No, I hadn't. I'd been to Nashville a number of times. We did some work for the State Museum there. I like those visits to Nashville, and I've enjoyed, you know, I've been coming to Union City now for 3.5, almost 4 years, pretty much every month. And in the last 2 years under construction, definitely every month. And I've enjoyed it. I've enjoyed the people. I've enjoyed the food. And I've learned to distinguish between the qualities of pulled pork in particular.